Las palabras pertenecen al aire. Y el viento no tiene por qué llevárselas. Con la llegada de los podcasts, la radio vive otra oportunidad. Esto es Segundo Aire. Conversaciones que el aire nos trajo, pero el viento no se pudo llevar. Todos los jueves, encuentra un nuevo episodio con lo mejor de la propuesta cultural y musical de Ibero 90.9.
En este episodio le damos un segundo aire a la entrevista que Andy McCluskey, vocalista de la icónica banda OMD, dio para La Burocracia de la Radio con el burócrata Eric Tello. En la conversación hablaron sobre el amor de la banda por México y su público, de la importancia de la radio, del origen de la música electrónica de los 70 y las influencias que moldearon su estilo tan particular.
Estamos aquí ya en Ibero 90.9, La Burocracia de la Radio. ¿Por qué iniciamos con esta canción específicamente? Es porque tenemos invitado de lujo aquí en Ibero 90.9, La Burocracia y el primer turno. Ya saben cuál he escuchado miles de veces en sus vidas presentes y pasadas, en sueños, en la radio, en la televisión y en sus incluso dispositivos que compraron y gastaron su propio dinero. Por supuesto que es Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark y tenemos aquí en cabina la presencia de Andy McCluskey. How are you, mate?
I'm very good, mate. How are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. We were talking just small talk about traffic and planes and all that kind of stuff. I hope it's not boring anymore. I would like to start talking about... I saw an interview of you guys on the BBC in where you were... The interviewer asked you about... what is some place that you were surprised to see that people engage or that you were huge? And you say two places. You say the Philippines and you say Mexico.
Yes.
And that was because you played a festival just after you came back. And I was wondering, are you still surprised? It has been a lot of shows and years between that the first time in Mexico and... are you still surprised that Mexico people is so engaged with your music?
No. Now we know that Mexico loves us and we love Mexico. It was just crazy. We had no idea that we had more hits in Mexico in the 1980s than we did in Germany and USA and Canada and Italy and France. It was just... we had no idea because nobody told us. Nobody asked us to play concerts. Yeah. So it was only late we realized that OMD and Mexico have a love affair.
Yeah. And what would you say is the thing that the crowd in Mexico are like interested in the music? What would you believe or what kind of stuff in your music do you believe that... sit so well with Mexico?
Good question. I think one of the things that helps us is that many of our big hits, they do not have a lyrical chorus. It's a synth melody. So it doesn't matter if you don't speak English, you can sing the melody.
Yeah. It's catchy and it's memorable. More than catchy, I will say it's memorable.
I like that. Thank you.
And talking about crowds in Mexico, we actually have a couple of reasons because you guys were like huge and are huge here in Mexico. It's because the things, the radio and the physical formats. There's a lot of songs that you... listen on the radio and then you go to the flea markets. There's a lot of record stores here in Mexico that sell a lot of music and then you see these records and you play them and they say, oh, it's like the song of the radio that I've been listening to all my life. So perhaps that is one thing about that could explain why in Mexico we are very fond of you. And I was wondering, nowadays the industry is not like ruled by physical formats anymore.
No,
it's a whole complete different guides. If you want to you know release a song, you don't release a 7-inch. Mm-hmm. You have to make perhaps a reel. I don't know. What would you say are the main changes for you having such a long career with those changes?
I mean, we are blessed that people still play our songs on the radio. So we have gone across the generations. People hear us all the time, and also in adverts and films. But the music industry is so different now. I mean, when we started out, it was all vinyl.
Yeah.
There was no CDs. There was no streaming. There was no no downloading. You know, yeah. I mean, it's all changed, it's very different now. You know, people still like to collect vinyl, yeah. And actually, vinyl now sounds better than it ever did. It's quality vinyl, it's fine. But if you'll have to translate this for your listeners, yeah. But I have a musician joke for you.
Okay,
I'm standing up. I'm looking. You see my jeans. Yeah. Everybody wondered why they have this tiny, tiny pocket.
Yeah.
That's if you're a musician, it's your Spotify royalties.
vamos a traducirla de una vez. Es un chiste de músicos. Habla de, si se preguntan, se paró y se levantó y mostró el pequeño bolsillo dentro de los jeans. Y nos dice cuáles son, por qué tendremos ese pequeño bolsillo. Yo pensaba que era para relojes de bolsillo, pero resulta que son las regalías de Spotify que utilizan hoy en día. That's wild. That's actually wild to, you know, in 2025, some musicians, some even indie or in the mainstream or whatever, musicians have more revenues or more reliable income on the physical formats than streaming or Spotify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why do you think that we end up like that?
I think different generations consume their music in different ways. I think many people from my generation still like to buy vinyl. They love having record decks now.
Yeah.
And I think the younger generation, it's completely digital. Everything is streaming now. I think that there is a divide. But hey, you know what? The most important thing is, as long as you're still listening to good music, it doesn't matter how you get it.
That's great. That's a great thought. And I actually bring one of the vinyls here. And it's still, I also read that you guys really didn't like this one in particular.
Pass
and
it
the
to
first
me.
Song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the Pacific Age album. We have kind of difficult memories with this album because we were just non-stop. We were so busy that when we made this album, we almost don't even remember making it. It was so... We would be on tour all the time. We'd get home, the record company would say, new album for Christmas. And we'd be like, oh, you know, we have to write 10 songs in 6 weeks. So yeah. we just felt totally, totally under pressure. The first song on this album, Stay, it should not be on the record. Honestly, it's not good enough. I'm sorry if anybody likes it.
Yeah.
I'm being honest now. My personal feeling, I co-wrote it. In fact, I wrote it. No, it was about Paul. The first song on this album should be If You Leave. But it was still owned by Paramount Pictures. They wouldn't let us use it. So next year is the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
We're going to release the version that we're supposed to with If You Leave on it.
That would be great. That's going to be great. Yeah. Well, so many years after, just a sec. But yeah, it's kind of wild, and I really like the song. I really like it, and you guys were saying that it got like brass in it, you know, like this this specific sounds in it, and I was wondering that you'd never really use them until this record. So I was wondering, what is the thing that you decide to, you know, I've never used this kind of song, I will use it now. What is the thing that gets you to make something in particular for certain records?
We weren't just about being a synthesizer band. We were about trying to do new things. Mm. It, for us and for other people to listen to. So we had played a lot of old analog synthesizers, and then in the 1984 we got a Fairlight computer. And it was the first thing you could program. It had a screen and it had great big floppy disks, like real old-fashioned computers. You loaded in the sounds, and it had brass samples on it. So we wrote a song using brass samples just because we'd never used them before. It was fun for a while. We just liked to try different things, but it was just a crazy thing we did for a couple of years. We stopped using brass after that. But and I'll tell you something about the Fairlight. We bought this thing called a Fairlight. It came from Australia.
Okay.
It cost, this is in 1983, it cost £24,000, which is what my parents' house was worth.
Whoa, okay.
The house
That's
I
wild.
Grew up in.
That's wild. That is completely wild. Wow. How many things changed in terms of the gear that you were using? Because that kind of stuff, you always guys were, you know what, you are the first band that used a lot of things. And you were the first band to make a lot of things that now we see them as completely usual or normal. You know, you guys were in tour with Gary Numan, and I was wondering what kind of those experiences, you know, like patching things and getting your things on the actual sounds to produce them, do you believe are something that nowadays it is completely useful to have those things on those kind of experiences and knowledges in terms of making music now?
It was a very different way to make music. You know, we did not want to do what we saw as rock guitar cliches. You know, we were looking for something to sound different. So we started writing songs differently and we started looking for synthesizers. The crazy thing was that right up until 1979, there was only three bands using synthesizers in Britain, and it was us, the Human League, and Cabaret Voltaire, who were also from Sheffield. And then suddenly in 1979, particularly us and the Human League, we were like, this guy called Gary Numan has two number one singles, and we were like, who the hell is he? Hang on, we've been playing synths now for a couple of... Where did he come from? But he was so big, he asked us to support him on tour because he bought Electricity, our first single, when he was working in a record shop. We went out and supported him. I mean, it was... I mean, the crazy things, man, I mean, our first single, Electricity, we wrote it when we were 16 years old. And that was the song. And we had no idea about this until years later. Vince Clarke said to us, oh, yeah. Me and the boys were in a club in Basildon in Essex. And we heard Electricity in 1979. And we went, that's it. Let's throw away the guitars. We're going to play synths. And that's how Depeche Mode started.
Okay, wow. That's a great story.
It's like, okay, so Vince told us this. So, you know, it's true.
it's a big flex. It's a big flex to say, you know, I inspired a whole generation of music by making music.
Yeah, and it was crazy.
What would you say, what is the main topic that you guys had at 16 years, 17 years making music? What is the main things that were on your head?
Well, I mean, we wrote the song Electricity, which actually, you know, considering we wrote it in 1975, it's about how electrical power is generated and talking about the problems with fossil fuels, which is pretty heavy shit for a 16-year-old to be writing about. Obviously, you know, I said, you know, we didn't want to do guitar cliches. We also didn't want to do lyrical cliches. So we were not writing like, ooh, baby, I love you. You know, it was like, I wanted to write a song about Enola Gay, the aeroplane that dropped the atom bomb on Hiroshima. You know, it's we always wanted to write about different things.
And that's something I realized when listening to your whole catalog, guys. You have pretty dark themes. You know, like you talk about real deep shit, man.
But with happy melodies.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask.
Schizophrenia.
When we here in Mexico, we are just singing the melody because some people we didn't realize what is the actual thing that was happening on the lyrics, and then we it's like it's always optimistic, but the lyrics are like kind of brings down.
Well, like I always said, if you want to give somebody some political medicine, put some sugar on it.
Okay. That's great. That's actually great. And you know, there's have been a lot of if then there was a lot of shitty things going on in the world. Perhaps we will just say 2025 is a lot worse in terms of things going to hit the fan.
You know what? Mostly the world has been going in a positive direction. Mm. Yes, there are still some things which are not very nice.
Okay.
And we just have to keep working on them. But as I say to people who complain about 2025, I say, it's not 1940.
Okay.
You know, yeah. We don't have Adolf Hitler and we don't have the Japanese, killing people all over the Pacific. And so things could be worse. But we also have to remember, and this is why our last album had a song called Kleptocracy on it. Another really catchy tune, but it's about being ruled by thieves. Remember, 1933, Adolf Hitler was elected Chancellor of Germany.
He was elected.
And then he started changing the law. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. Woof. That's kind of heavy. It's really, really heavy. Something that you will not expect to be thinking when you listen to OMD music. And you're still making music and touring and doing this kind of stuff and this kind of mixing. How do you stay optimistic with this?
If I have passion and energy for something, then I put my 100% heart and soul into it. And if you don't do that, then you shouldn't do it. You know, so when I'm on stage, it's 100%. If we make a record, it's 100%. If not, stop doing it. I've seen bands on stage and you're like, you're just doing this for the money, aren't you? Because there's no energy, there's no love, there's no passion. And, you know, I see bands of my generation. I'll say no names, but, you know, they make a new album.
Yeah.
But there's nothing there. It's just like it's like a bad copy of their album from 40 years ago. You know, it sounds like them, but there's no quality in it. It's like, just don't do it. But they do it because their manager says, hey, if you want a new tour, you've got to have a new logo on your T-shirt. You need a new album, even if it's shit.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty hot take, but it's real. It's real. I think that I can hear what you mean. And I'm talking about, again, a little bit about the past and the sounds. There's a lot of things that have been going on in the industry a lot between, you know, in that time you were talking in some ways about the future. You know, you have sounds and lyrics and topics that talk about what will be in the future. And nowadays, even when we want to talk about the future, we use that sounds from the last time. There's has been, you know, this kind of stuff in curiosity about the golden age in the future, you know, the high high towers and cities. It's not anymore. Why do you think that we think of the future in terms of the past?
Well, after the Second World War, there was this great positive moment when, you know, we'd overcome fascism and everybody was like, the world must be better now. And technology is going to make it better. And, you know, medicine will be amazing and the technology will be incredible and we will have flying cars and everybody will, you know. There was this utopian vision that everything was going to be more positive. And in many ways, my musical heroes in the 70s, Kraftwerk, were singing about that. But already in the 70s, I was growing up in England where there was lots of unemployment, factories were shutting down, Everything was dirty and decaying. And the instead of being utopian, it was dystopian. It was negative. And so really that vision of the future, you know, like Disneyland's Tomorrowland, you know,
yeah.
the perfect future, that's become kind of, yeah, it's a nostalgia for a future in the past.
Hmm.
Because the reality is that, you know, technology didn't fix everything. Bad things. People still, you know, stole money. People, you know, you can have a drug that could save thousands of people, but no, the company that made it wants you to pay $10,000 a month for 3 pills.
Yeah.
You know, I know this because my daughter is on one of those drugs and she's had to fight her insurance company. So it's, yeah, I understand why, you know, my generation has a nostalgia for the past,
yeah,
from the 1950s, and so does your generation.
Yeah, we didn't even, you know, leave that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... we had an album a few years ago that started with a song that... It had some recordings from a Shanghai airport.
Yeah.
And I programmed this computer to sound like... a message in an airport. Mm. And the first song on the new album, it was just like, please remain seated. The future that you anticipated has been cancelled.
That's great. And it's about Shanghai. It's a Shanghai airport.
Yeah, I was in Shanghai at the time. And so I heard this like bing bong. It was just a woman talking about a flight to, I don't even know where it was going, but to Hong Kong, I think.
Yeah.
But I just thought, yeah, okay, you know, this. I was in this amazing brand new airport, and still I was thinking, yeah, this. Don't go anywhere. The future that you were hoping for, it's not happening.
Yeah, and you guys as a band have this particular experience, unique experience of an opportunity to, you know, travel the world and relate with the places that you go. And I was wondering what kind of relationship do you establish to the places where you visit and play, and how do you, you know, like mix it or blend it with the other experiences you got before?
It's difficult. It's difficult because, you know, you travel the world, fantastic. Mm. And then you don't get to see anything because you're doing a concert or you're doing interviews or you're just tired and jet lagged, so you sleep.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's very frustrating. But I still, it's amazing because I was a working class kid. You know, I didn't have any money when I grew up. So the opportunity, you know, did I think I would come to Mexico City for 5 times? No. You know, did I ever think I would go to China? No. I mean, listen. If I say this in America, people get freaked out because the word communism frightens them.
Yeah.
My dad was a Scottish communist just because he grew up in the Depression in the 1930s in Scotland and he saw the problems. And, you know, to him, communism was a beautiful idea. Now, I took him to China in 1994 and I said, is it still a beautiful idea? He said, yes, it's the perfect idea. I said, yeah, it's a great idea. You just can't do it right because nobody is generous with their time 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365. You need to incentivize people by giving them some more money. But I grew up thinking that China was amazing. I was reading communist propaganda magazines when I was a teenager because I had a vision of a wonderful utopian future where everybody shared everything. And then by the time you get to the 1990s and I take my dad to China, the Chinese have abandoned communism and gone capitalist because they know it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, first of all, sorry for keeping you to know more Mexico City with this interview.
It's okay. I have a day off tomorrow.
That's great. That's great. Well, first, sorry. And then talking about this ages in your, you know, when you were a kid having this and growing up with these kind of ideas, do you believe those have some influence in the music that you did later?
I mean, Yeah, I'm still a socialist. Mm. You know, my politics are definitely left of the center, and I do believe in sharing things, and I do think you have to take care of people. So, you know, I still write lyrics that are about being kind, and also, you know, I mean, Bauhaus Staircase, the last album we had out. The Bauhaus school was shut down by the Nazis in 1933. 5 years ago in COVID, our government in England, democratic government, gave money to everybody who wasn't working, but not to musicians, actors, singers, dancers. You don't have real jobs. We want to shut you down. Yeah. I was making that comparison then 5 years ago.
That's heavy, and there's a lot of music, and it has always been a place with a lot of the huge rock stars and musicians from around the world. Have you had any contact with the growing scene from the last years?
With which scene?
With the scene in Britain, in England, in Sheffield, in the.
I mean, obviously, you know, we've done lots of work with lots of different musicians, and I know lots of musicians. I don't know a lot of the more recent musicians. It's quite difficult to... You have to be careful with your politics in music because, I mean, quite often, as we have seen, you know, if you're a musician, you get called, you know, liberal, snowflake, woke... whatever, by the people on the right. And they go, say, yeah, yeah. If those musicians are telling you to think that way, then you know it's wrong because they're all screwed up lefties, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be careful what you say and so it's not used against you. But listen, I'm still going to say what I feel and think. And if it resonates with other people, then that's great. You know, if it doesn't, you know, then as long as people want to listen to the music, you know, we can argue about politics. And this is the sad thing. Politics is so, it's so divisive now. It's very, very, I am right and you are wrong. There's no middle ground. There's no compromise now. It's very, very aggressive. And it kind of feels like it's gone back to the 1930s with communists and fascists.
Oof.
It's polarized, you know, the kind of the middle ground where people go, okay, well, I'm left, you're right, but you know, let's find a way to work together for the best of all of the people.
Yeah,
that seems to have gone at the moment, and I don't like that.
And it's kind of weird that the music is this perfect space to have real conversations. You know, it used to be some kind of to have fun and to forget about politics, but nowadays it seems like the perfect space to talk about issues because you can't have it anymore beyond music.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's true actually because this is, I mean, people now only listen to the politics that they agree with. They don't listen to anybody they disagree with. They just shut the TV station down, they shut the radio station down, they close the magazine or the paper. I mean, nobody is prepared to listen to somebody else's point of view now. It's completely just antagonistic politics, you know. I don't know how it's going to change, but it needs to change because at the moment it's a mess.
Yeah,
it's a mess.
I agree with that. I can agree with a lot of things that you've been saying, and I believe that's real rock and roll too. You know, don't give a shit about the opinion of the so-called industry, that it's like this kind of ghost, but it's real people actually that decide and make things about what the most people have to listen to or have to consume in some way. And that's the real rock and roll, to don't give a shit about that. That's great. And I wanted to ask you, nearly ending this conversation, I would love to talk even more. But you guys have been, you know, making amazing records for years, having, I believe, amazing experiences while touring and traveling the world, knowing a lot of people that connect with you in some way that transcends the language and the culture that you visit. Nowadays, and I'm stealing an Anthony Bourdain question, what is the thing that thrills having such life?
Okay. I am a very lame. My hobby, because I never wanted to be a professional musician, I wanted to do fine art. I wanted to be a sculptor and do audio installations with sculpture and sound. I took a gap year before I went to university and I started the band. So this band is now 47 years old. But it wasn't what I wanted to do. Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark is a 47-year-old beautiful accident. So the thing is, I love the fact that I've seen the world. I love the fact that I can go on stage and people know the songs and we can have a party. And I like the fact that I've earned some very good money. But you know what the best thing is? I'm not a scientist. I'm not a politician. I can't change the whole world. I can't create a drug that will cure cancer or, you know, stop world hunger or something. But when somebody comes up to me and says, can I just say, this song, this 3-minute song, is in my heart, it's in my head. It reminds me of my mother, it reminds me of my father. We played it when my brother died because it was his favorite song. It reminds me when my child was born, this was on the radio, and I always think, when somebody tells you that something you made is in their life for 3 minutes and they like that feeling, that's the best gift you can get.
That's great. That's a great thought. And I would love to have someday being able to you know, experience that kind of thing, because I think that I'm there on the other side, and it's also great, you know, like in the other side to connect with the music and to connect with the artists and to have a song remind you a smell, a certain time in your life, with your parents, with your family. It's what it's music about, you know, like connecting with people.
Well, I mean, but you are a connector, you are a facilitator, you are a conduit. You help people and you guide them with your taste, you know. So you will play, I like this, I hope you like it. This made me think. So, you know, you it's a different job to me, but it's still a connecting job.
That's cool. There's a lot of people that are actually mad about my taste here in the radio. So hearing that is cool, you know. Ya escucharon, no lo dije yo. They listened, I didn't say it. Now, for my final question. You have a show this weekend at Corona Capital in Mexico. Since the pandemic, there is like a lot of people that the last couple of years have been starting, or it's their first very huge crowd experience festival and music festival thing. There's a lot of people that have been listening to you too in Spotify in the records, but it's their first time experiencing Orchestra Maneuvers in the Dark live. What will be the promise for that people that are going to open their eyes for the first time?
We're going to make it easy. we're only playing for 70 minutes. That's what we were given. We're closing the tent stage at Corona Capital. If you want the politics and you want the experimental music, we'll come back and play longer for you next time.
That's right.
Tomorrow, we're going to play every fucking hit single we have. Saturday.
Yeah.
Every single. We will play it.
That's a great pitch, because, you know, we love it.
We're just going to have a party.
That's great. And we would love to hear also the thanks, the deep cuts, the rarities and the B-sides also in a concert for our next occasion, perhaps.
Yeah, we will be back.
That's a great promise too, and that's cool. And I really love you guys. I really love the music that you did. It's amazing to have the opportunity to chat with a band that it's so influential. And here in the college radio, we also play a lot of music that it's like nobody knows who the shit is, the people that we're playing. And with you guys, it's cool to, you know, talk to your mother and say, "We're gonna, I am gonna have an interview with this guy," mm-hmm. and they say, like, "Oh shit, that for real?" Yeah, it's cool to connect with people in such a huge way.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. It's been great to talk with you. You've asked me some very interesting questions. Thanks. I like it when people ask me questions and I have to go, "Oh, I need to think about that."
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I hope so. I will not ask you about your favorite taco here in Mexico that I'm guessing that you have that been told to you before. So anything else that you would like to say to your Mexican fans?
Just, yeah, those of you who are going to come and see us on Saturday night, bring your dancing shoes. We're going to have a party and we will come back and we will play a bigger mixture when we have like 100 minutes to play.
That's cool.
We go for a few deep dives as well as all that, but we still always play the hits.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. There's a lot of dancers that don't want to play the hits for any particular reason.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand that. I mean, have respect for the songs that have made you famous.
Yeah.
You know, play them correctly and play them with the energy and the love that you gave them when you made them. Because people have memories associated with those songs. So don't disrespect your song and don't disrespect your fans' memory.
That's great. Did you listen to that, Tom York? You can play Creep. Well, thank you so
exactly.
much. See you on the show on Saturday. And this is a pretty cool hit, Enola Gay. Would you like to present it as you were the host?
I'm Andy McCluskey. I'm on Ibero 90.9, and this is Enola Gay by Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Más podcasts, música y radio en vivo en Ibero 99.fm.